CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Venezuela. Once upon a time in the 20th century, Venezuela's prosperity rivaled major parts of the U.S. What we now think of as Venezuela is in the hands of a regime led by a man named Maduro, who inherited it from a man named Chavez. And the regime is said to be sinister. Perhaps it is. We have watched Washington declare Venezuela, Caracas, illegitimate leadership. And the U.S. has endorsed another leadership entirely that is now in exile from Venezuela. We also think of Venezuela as a source of narco-terrorism or gangs. All of this can be true at the same time. What is to be done? I welcome Alison Federka of Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site, who is looking at reasons to be cheerful about Venezuela in the future. Alison, we begin with the big question. Once upon a time, there was the Cold War. You were with us or against us. Venezuela was with us. But there's no Cold War anymore. So what side is Venezuela on? Is it on any side? Good evening to you, Alison.
Good evening to you as well. There is no Cold War anymore. And Venezuela is coming, like all of South America, Venezuela is transitioning into this new kind of post-Cold War era, where the aftermath of the Cold War is starting to disappear, and we're starting to see a new world take shape with COVID fallout and the Ukraine crisis and all of these things that are now reshaping the global system. As for Venezuela, the same can be true for Venezuela as pretty much any country, which is they're reassessing. They are trying to figure out what is it that as a country I need, and how can I go about pursuing those needs and satisfying those needs, and where are my limitations? So for Venezuela right now, the most pressing need is figuring out how to revive its economy. And while many countries in the world need to revive their economy, for Venezuela, we are talking on a completely different scale of resuscitating a very decrepit oil-producing industry there, as well as changing a lot of structural damage that was done during government management of the economy over the past 20 years, and looking to find a way to re-enter global and international markets, both for financing and trade and a lot of the other things that have been taken offline as a result of sanctions against the regime.
Once upon a time, my memory is that Venezuela was producing 3.2 million barrels per day. That is not possible today with what we're told of the infrastructure collapse. They need everything. Maybe 200,000, maybe 500,000 a day. It's not transparent. It's heavy oil and it needs refining. And it just so happens the U.S. has the refineries that can handle the heavy oil, because that was the 20th century's ambition. This was a utopia in South America. However, what is to be done? What is driving this? The first thing that is driving this, the possibility of a transformation, is that the Biden administration entreats Venezuela about energy. How so, Alison? What do you understand to be the quid pro quo between Washington and Caracas?
So right now, there's several different warfares that are going on. We've talked about Russia and Ukraine. There's the idea of economic warfare with sanctions that we're seeing across the globe. There's also what I would consider an energy warfare, or at least an energy crisis, which most people have heard about, primarily when it comes to Europe and the price of natural gas and the threat of losing natural gas supplies due to the problems with Russia. However, there's also energy crises looming in Pakistan, India, other parts of the Pacific Asia. And so we're seeing countries like Saudi Arabia and other oil producers also becoming more relevant, not just natural gas. And so we're also seeing kind of an alignment or grouping of countries, both for competing for providers and suppliers of hydrocarbons, as well as the providers themselves kind of grouping together for supplying different markets. And this is where Venezuela becomes more interesting, because the hydrocarbon demand is not going to disappear anytime soon. There will be a green energy transition, but we're not getting rid of oil anytime soon. So the oil that Venezuela has still is important, still is very attractive for the United States. And it can help if you put in the billions of dollars that would be needed to bring that oil production back online. It would help the U.S. construct some type of energy alliance that it's in the process of doing to be able to supply different users, such as European markets, or others with demands of sufficient oil or gas. In the case of Venezuela, obviously, we're talking about oil.
A second reason to be cheerful is hemispheric security. Now, Colombia, under a new regime, this is Gustavo Petro, has reestablished diplomatic relations with its neighbor, reopened the border for trade, and made remarks that suggest that there's a rapprochement between Caracas and Bogota. At the same time, you write that hemispheric security could be aided by Venezuela. How so?
So hemispheric security is a primal need of the United States. The reason why it can project power abroad and not have to worry about things closer to home is because if it has a secure hemisphere. Colombia plays a critical role in the U.S. strategy of maintaining security when it comes to the Western Hemisphere, and especially when it comes to the Caribbean basin. And that's founded primarily by geography. So that's the U.S. need. And they can't afford to lose Colombia because right now there is no better alternative or alternative candidate to play that role with the U.S. as an important ally on the southern part of the Caribbean basin. Then you have the Colombians themselves, and they have their own interests. And that's basically the need to improve ties with Venezuela will ultimately result in helping Colombia solve its own domestic problems. And that includes migration of Venezuelans into Colombia, alleviating a little bit of that pressure that they've been dealing with for the past, I would say, 3 years. It's a longer term thing, but it's something that they need to address. It also would help them with illicit trade that goes across the border that they're looking to clamp down on, as well as finding peace deals with a lot of the guerrilla and narco trafficking groups that Petro has said he wants to form a massive peace deal with Colombia. Those groups reside a lot in Venezuela. They have ties to parts of the Maduro regime. And so if you want to have an effective peace deal, you need to somehow acknowledge and involve the Venezuelan component or role in that dynamic. And so there's a lot of pressure on Colombia to solve these domestic problems where Venezuela is key. And so for the United States, if they want a stable Colombia, if they want to maintain good ties with Colombia, they need to accept the fact that those Venezuelan-Colombian relations need to be improved and will be improved. If they don't do that, then they risk alienating an important security ally in the hemisphere.
A third reason is immigration. You can just look at the headlines from New York City to understand that Venezuelans, not just fleeing the country, but leaving for the United States to earn money to send home. Now, the reason I go quickly on immigration is that they're seeking money. They're seeking sustenance. These are educated young people. However, the problem is they're leaving a country that is in the hands of a surveillance state, bully boys from Cuba. You know this, Allison. So you don't make friends with your friends. You make friends with your enemies. Is your measure that Venezuela is something that can be invited, ushered, weaned from the influence of bad actors such as Iran and Moscow? Are they ready to be converted? In other words, a hand out to them in some fashion by lifting sanctions or providing technology for their attenuated oil field, could that give benefits in future?
That's exactly the calculus that is being made right now, both by the Venezuelans and by Washington. Ultimately, what it comes down to for Venezuela is who can help it reconstruct its economy better and faster. And the ability for Iran or Russia or China to do that has significantly declined in the past, 2 years or 6 months, depending on which country you're talking about there. With the United States, it's understood, if you want to try to improve relations, easing sanctions would help. That's something that both the opposition and the Maduro government can agree on, is that they would like sanctions alleviated. The tricky balance becomes that give and take, right? Because one side does not want to alleviate sanctions if it's only going to embolden a government that's not going to make good on their promises. And so what we've seen so far is not the actual lifting of sanctions yet or easing of all of them, but small moves of reciprocity, such as the recent prisoner exchanges and a couple other examples that show that they are working to try to establish some measures of good faith so that they can build on that and move up. This is not unique to the U.S. and Venezuela alone. We've seen the U.S. do this with Cuba as well. Again, the sanctions have not been eased yet, but the idea is to build up to that point because that's really the critical moment, both for the bilateral ties and reaching that point where it would actually be useful for Venezuela.
So what we have here is a moment for a change in direction, not only in Venezuela, but in Colombia, both countries toward the United States. And Colombia could be the interlocutor. Do you measure that, Allison? Gustavo Petro could act as an arbiter.
Yes, the Colombian relationship is extremely important when it comes to thinking about the U.S. and Venezuela.
Right.
And so given there's always the possibility of the U.S. and Venezuela going their own separate way from Colombia. But given the current dynamics and given the standing the current Petro government has with Venezuela, Colombia plays a very critical role right now in helping bridge that gap that we're trying to do and can also help with some backdoor talks should the need arise as well.
Allison Federica of Geopolitical Futures. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.